This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Israeli forces kill Yahya Sinwar, the Hamas leader and mastermind of the October 7th attack. And the most obvious question is, what's next? Is this a possibility of reaching peace? The number of political folks, both in the Middle East and here in the United States, are saying, yes, that this is an opportunity. Joining us to talk about that is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, senior fellow and military expert with Defense Priorities. Lieutenant Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
So I hear this chatter of, you know, this political talk and rhetoric and dialogue around that this creates an opportunity for peace in the Middle East. I'm kind of mystified by it. I watch your intel briefs that you have, and folks, I suggest that if you want some great information about all of what's going on so many different fronts around the world, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis does a great job with that. And I agree with you. I'm not so sure this is an opportunity. I'm a little mystified by that statement by so many, our president, our vice president, Bibi Netanyahu, and so many others.
You know, the best I can come up with is just wishful thinking, and we would like it to mean this, and boy, it'd be swell if it was, but there's no evidence at all that it's going to do anything. I mean, it represents just a profound misunderstanding or lack of understanding of how these kinds of terrorist-type organizations are created. Number one, that it's a resistance movement. It's been formed for decades of basically in response to the Israeli occupation of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip specifically, elected in 2005. But then they've had a militant wing that has, you know, tried to resist Israel. And of course, ever since October 7th, when Hamas had that horrific terrorist attack against Israel, and then Israel's response has been over the top. Now it's been nothing but a response to the complete destruction of the way of life inside of Gaza. And it's just irrational to think that a people, an entire 2 million group of people, is going to just submit because one man gets killed when there's, you know, literally thousands, tens of thousands have been killed so far, and the repression continues. So as long as the conditions that led to the rise of Hamas exist, so too is that resistance.
So how do we get to where we need to get, and how do we define peace? I saw your interview with Raja Menon, who's also part of Defense Priorities, and he describes Hamas as a mass movement. You read polls where somewhere between 57, 67, or 72%, if my memory serves me correct, of Palestinians don't necessarily align with Hamas, but they believe a lot of what Hamas is saying. And, you know, that there is no feeling on their part that there's any space, quite frankly, they're not in favor of a two-state solution, and that there's any space, however you want to say it, from the river to the sea, for Jews. So how do we get to,
you know, it's ironic,
you know, a plateau.
You have a situation where, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Lieutenant Colonel, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you have this ironic situation to where if the Palestinians use that phrase from the river to the sea, you know, everybody in the West gets all up in arms like, oh, my gosh, you know, this shows that they want to eliminate Israel, et cetera. But when Netanyahu himself uses that same exact phrase to mean the same thing, and he has the power to make it good, we don't bat an eye because he says we will rule from the river to the sea. And, of course, they're methodically destroying everybody in the Palestinian areas, and now it's including also increasing in the West Bank as well as the Gaza Strip. It's not quite to that same level yet, but the violence is considerable there. So to get to your point or question about what can bring to peace, until there is some kind of legitimate, viable path for the Palestinian people to have a future and a hope that they can have some kind of state, some kind of position where they have freedom, that there won't be any peace for anyone. And Israel is just, I think that they're pursuing the unattainable by thinking that they can use enough military power to, quote, destroy Hamas, but also to continue to keep, you know, all the Palestinian people locked into this area that now can't sustain life without foreign aid for the indefinite future. I mean, it's going to take decades of time to rebuild that place once the war stops, which obviously it hasn't yet. So there's already going to be a tremendous pressure for the Palestinian people to try to get some freedom when they can't even live. And those conditions is what led to Hamas in the first place. And it's going to continue to as long as there are people living there under those conditions. That's just the harsh truth of it.
But how do you deal with the aggressive nature of the Palestinians, whether they're aligned with Hamas, whether they're aligned with the Palestinian Authority or Hezbollah? Israel has taken a defensive posture with their air defense system. They have been bombed monthly for decades. I mean, you know, so what do you do? How do you get to a point where you can identify any piece of geography that one is willing to coexist and have a coterminous boundary with? From my perspective, I don't know nearly as much as you do about that area, but it seems a little difficult to figure out how we can coexist, you know, with a coterminous boundary.
It's unquestionably difficult because there are two sides to that equation. It's not just that Israel has been
the
recipient of being bombed every month or so, as you mentioned, because there is far more violence from the Israeli side against the Palestinian side. And when you say, you know, how do you
they have the capacity,
their aggressiveness,
I get it.
They are being that way because they are the ones who are receiving far more of the violence than Israel. For example, in the summer leading up to October 7th of last year, when the big terrorist attack, there were over 200 Palestinians who had been killed by the IDF in both the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank. And, you know, Western people don't seem to remember any of that happened prior to October 7th. But this thing was a boiling cauldron because they kept getting killed. And when people get oppressed and killed and denied any kind of freedom, they're going to respond that way. So until that dynamic changes, so both sides come to some agreement that they can coexist, as you say, then neither side will have peace or freedom.
But one has to admit that the Palestinians were involved in aggressive behavior towards Israelis as well, and there were killings and there were beatings and there were thefts and there were any number of issues that they were having to deal with. I go back to this question. Yeah, I mean, one has the capacity. You pick a fight, and if you don't really know who you're fighting with and they happen to have a black belt in karate and you get destroyed, it's hard to complain when you're participating in picking the fight. And when you look at the polling that's done amongst Palestinians, where I'm having a big time, you know, difficulty wrapping my head around this, when they don't see any capacity for Israel as a state, why should Israel see any capacity for the Palestinians or the Palestinian Authority as a state?
That's a valid question. But there have been periods of time to where the Palestinians have said we're willing to contemplate a two-state solution, but the Israeli side is not. And that's just a fact. There is zero willingness on the side of the Israeli side. But consider this, though. If as long as you say that, you are guaranteeing that there is going to be conflict because you cannot keep an entire people group literally imprisoned within the confines of the Gaza Strip and think that they're ever going to live peaceably. They just won't do it.
Oh, no, I don't. Look, I do not disagree with that assertion. And actually, there's a fairly healthy number of Israelis that I actually believe that, too. And that's why there's friction within the Netanyahu leadership in Israel today. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a smaller percentage that are interested in a two-state solution. There are some, but there are significantly more Israelis that believe,
sure,
like Netanyahu does, that there shouldn't be any two-state solution and that all the Palestinians should be driven out of Israel.
No different than the Palestinians.
mean, and the only difference, true enough, but the difference is that one side has the power to make it happen and the other side is utterly powerless.
But that's always the case, right? I mean, when we look at some of the African nations that are there, you know, and we look at the historical tribes that are there, some tribes align with others and are able to have the capacity to browbeat the others into submission. I don't know where this is going to end. I mean, I just get the sense that our own politicians are sending us mixed messages about how this is going to ultimately play out. We keep talking about a two-state solution, but I don't see any articulable, actionable intelligence, information, data, or otherwise to believe that that's even a remote possibility in the decades to come. But yet we're still pontificating on this notion, you know, as we move forward. I'm sorry, go ahead.
As long as we continue to say we want a two-state solution with our mouths, but don't do anything at all to actually bring it into capacity, because that's going to require both the Palestinians and the Israelis to make concessions that neither wants to make. And until we're willing to use some of our leverage to compel both sides to do that, neither side is going to. And, of course, as long as Israel has our complete and total unquestioned backing, they won't make a single giving on any kind of a negotiation. They won't give anything because they don't think they have to, and therefore there will never be a solution. And we just look frankly stupid when we keep claiming with our mouth that we're looking for a two-state solution when we aren't.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Art.
Yeah, I mean, but the interesting thing here is, you know, you look at Jordan, you look at Syria, UAE, Egypt, others. Nobody wanted the Palestinians. In fact, very many of them pushed them out, right? Because they kept trying to overthrow
their governments. You've got to understand why. The primary issue is not that they don't like the Palestinians. Because there's great support for the Palestinians throughout all those countries you mentioned, because mainly a lot of Palestinians live there, former ones. But they don't want to be basically seen as being and helping Israel to cleanse itself of all the Arabs, which they view, and this is also important. You keep talking about, you know, both sides say they don't want the other there. Well, remember, the Palestinians were on the land before 1948 and were killed in large numbers and driven off of their land. So in their view, they want to get it back. And so that's why these Arab nations, primarily, there's other reasons too, they don't want to take them, because they don't want to say we're basically conceding that Israel is going to completely kick them off. And now then, where do they live? Now they'll be having to live in those other countries where they don't have history and they don't have the land that they had before. Now they have to be accommodated somewhere else. And you're talking millions of people. So nobody wants to take that on for multiple reasons.
But is it also not true that even in modern times, this has been a back and forth situation, whether it's the British colonialism as it relates to them taking over the Ottoman Empire? But this has never been really to any extent stable by any stretch of the imagination for any lengthy period of time, right?
Well, certainly you had the Ottoman Empire first, and then you had British, you know, especially after World War One, taking over a lot of that stuff. The Palestinian people were just, you know, they were just living on the land, and they, you know, had small states. They never had state power. That's why it was these other right. empires were able to lord it over them. But then along comes Israel in 1948 and just, you know, pushes them off the land and, kills thousands of them and takes it over. So they've just been pushed around by everybody. So they're, you know, certainly not very happy about that. And they've been lamenting for decades.
But historically, no different than what happened to the Jews in the Middle East. I mean, you know, I was listening to what Raja Menon said about, you know, that from the Palestinian perspective, Jews in Israel or Jews having an Israeli state is a historical injustice to the Palestinians. I mean, we can't just arbitrarily pick a time in history and then believe that, you know, from that point forward, this is where the injustice exists without going back and gaining a bigger and broader understanding of the entire region as a whole. Wouldn't that be fair?
Certainly, but this case, I don't think this is a hard one to figure out at all, because the Jews were driven out 2,000 years ago when the Romans conquered them and pushed them out, and they weren't there in any number, but, other than just small numbers of people since the late 1800s. But the Palestinian people, the Arabs who lived there, had been there for centuries, and then they were literally forced off and killed. So I think that's a pretty clear delineation.
No, I get what you're saying, but what the point that I'm trying to make is they talk and they speak as if this has never occurred to anyone else in the Middle East. I mean, and that's been part of what has driven.
I don't think the instability
when you think about when you think about the overthrow of the Shah in Iran and everything that's gone on there, as well as Iraq and what's going on in Afghanistan for centuries. It's as though that we can just arbitrarily pick this date, and that seems to be the sum of the nation and the rights and the definition of what historical injustice may be as it relates to Israel. But I go back to this description of Hamas being a mass movement. What does that mean? I mean, as it relates to the percentage of the population of Palestinians that may not openly engage with Hamas, but believe in everything that they stand for?
The Hamas was literally, it's just a political party that was voted in 2005 to help the Palestinian people get what they wanted, which is freedom of some sort. And then, of course, Hamas, once they got in power, they basically stopped the elections, and then they just kept their political power, and they stayed that way, basically a form of a dictatorship. And, of course, the Palestinian people, they're powerless to do anything else, so they got to make do with the best they can. And they were very widely disliked prior to 10/7, especially. But since when you're faced with the side that's your people or the side that's killing you in large numbers, you know, there's a lot of people that would support them now that wouldn't have otherwise. So I think we get too focused on the term Hamas. It's a means to an end, a political means that turned into a militant wing. And right now they just want anybody that's going to bring, you know, some kind of peace. But nobody has any power to do it in Palestine, so it doesn't matter really who's in charge, because really nobody's in charge.
So what is the benefit for them to hold on to these hostages at this point in time and not just turn them over? I mean, at some
it's at least a little bit of public leverage that they have, and that's why they took them in the first place, because they wanted to try to use that to leverage to get something to benefit themselves, because they have no other leverage to use. And, of course, there's no value to them to just hand the hostages over and then give up whatever leverage they had left. And I think that Israel has chosen that they've marked them off. I don't think they expect to get any of them back, and so they're not willing to give anything. So there really isn't any leverage. They just think that there should be, but you know, until they're all dead, or until all the Palestinian people who are holding them are dead, I think that you're going to continue to see that, because Israel is not willing to give anything up to get them back.
So do they fall back on the mantra that they talk about all the time, that they don't fear death and that they just consider it an honor? I mean, how do you negotiate with folks like that? I mean,
they do want to live. I assure you they do. And they do want to end the fighting. They definitely do. They've been saying they want to negotiate a settlement from the first. The issue, though, is Israel doesn't want to give anything that the other side is asking for at all. And if you don't give and take in a negotiation, there's never going to be an end until one side either destroys the other completely. Or it'll just keep fighting. I mean, that's the truth of it.
But you know, when you talk about like the Philadelphia corridor, I mean, why, for the benefit of the listening audience, that's the area in southern Lebanon, southern Israel along the border. Why would that not be a legitimate ask for the Israelis in light of everything that they've seen with the tunnels and everything that goes on there? And that's the way that they've been able to smuggle arms. It's the same thing on the north side relative to Hezbollah and the position that the UN has taken, where they, you know, there was a lot of agreement signed that they wouldn't be in certain areas. They're there. They're uncovering tunnels. They're uncovering munition dumps and everything else. How do you develop a sense of trust in anything that anybody has to say when that's what you're uncovering? You know, and then on the heels of our
you'll see that implies that somehow Israel can use all this violence that I was describing that preceded 10/7, and that the other side should do nothing. Of course, they're the much weaker side, so they're going to do whatever they can to try and defend themselves and to push back and to get arms, etc. That's just the nature of war. And you said, what gives them the right or what's unreasonable? Hey, as long as you've got the power, anything you want to do is going to be reasonable. It doesn't matter what anybody says. But in a war, actions have counteractions, and it's just part of the nature of war. So it's ridiculous to suggest that the Palestinian side is not going to do whatever it can within its ability to try and fight back. And, you know, they still are on the bottom of the powers dynamic. That's why they keep dying in such large numbers every day. But I'm sorry, well, I'm going to have to break contact now because I've got another show to do real quick.
No, thank you so much, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis. No, I agree with you. It is a war. Not many people refer to it as such, and everyone's going to do what they need to do to survive, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
You bet. Thanks,
sir. That's Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, senior fellow and military expert with Defense Priorities, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.